Hello, everybody, and welcome to Squawk 1200 here on EAA Radio, 1210 AM, 96.5 FM, if you're in the local area, online at eaaradio.net. My name is Zach, and I'm joined by Wireless Mike. Mike, great to have you with me.
And good morning, or afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon on this first day of EAA, and we are joined not by the Secretary of Energy, but by the VP of Aviation Electronics Association, Rick Perry. Thanks so much for joining us, Rick.
Absolutely.
We were talking, actually, before we got started in the show, you were mentioning that one of the big issues facing the industry that you help represent at the governmental level is a dearth of technicians. Do you want to go into that a little bit more for us?
Well, sure. We challenge just like everybody does. We've got a very low unemployment right now, which is good news. The bad news is we have very low unemployment. And as a result of that, we're always struggling to find technicians, just like any other industry. The challenge we face, and we're doing a lot of good things. For those that follow the politics of aviation, the last FAA reauthorization included language that supports technician training and pilot shortage as well. But in particular, one of the things that kind of got lost a little bit was that there, in fact, is specific language to include the technical side of aviation, which is great. But that's the long ball. That's the five-year solution. That's looking at the future. What we really have to deal with today is getting people in the seats today. And that's the thing AEA has been working on quite a bit lately. Lately, for better part of 10 years. With our membership being international, we've sponsored rulemaking in Europe that really creates a general aviation avionics technician. Here in the States, AEA has been a big proponent of what's called NCAT, National Center for Aerospace and Transportation Technologies. And through them, they've developed the Aviation Electronics Technician certification, as well as criteria for installations. AEA petitioned FAA and recently got it accepted as an acceptable means of compliance for qualifications and skills to become an avionics repairman. That's the type of stuff we're working on to get people working today. The apprenticeship programs to bring people in. You know, when you look at avionics, a few decades ago, it was about bench work. It was about, the literally taking boxes apart, changing resistors and transistors, and in my early days, tubes. Today, it's not so much. The hardware is hugely reliable, and when it does fail, it typically goes back to the manufacturer. So what we're really dealing with are computer integration. And those are the things that, you don't have to be an A&P or you don't have to be an aviation specialist to have those electronic skills that we need. And so we're creating programs that will transition people with the electronic skills and teach them what the pointy end of that vehicle looks like and what it's called. We can teach the languages.
So what kind of people are you looking at to go into this industry? What kind of backgrounds what do they need in order to start learning this stuff?
Fundamentally, computer integration, software management, software configuration, being able to troubleshoot software. Those are the skills we really need in this industry, and it carries over to the new technologies as well.
So somebody coming out of high school, would they be good candidates to go in and start working doing some of these programs?
Absolutely. It's when you talk about, we tend to look at ourselves. I've got just shy of 50 years in this industry, and we tend to look at ourselves and we want to hire ourselves. But that doesn't work in today's world. We need the people that have the technical skills, and if the person has a strong computer background and they're a high school grad, more power to them. If they're a college grad, more power to them. It's not the level of education, formal education, is necessary as much as it is the passion for the electronics.
We're speaking with Rick Perry. He's the Vice President of Government and Industry Affairs for the Aircraft Electronics Association. We talked a little bit about this beforehand. I did want to ask you, the Senate is set potentially today to vote on the new FAA administrator's confirmation. Currently, there's an acting administrator after Michael Huerta left at the end of his term. How do you, as a government affairs professional, try and maintain continuity for your members of the AEA and keep your priorities going as these administrations change over time?
Interesting question. And you know, my initial thought is not much. He's the corporate head of a very large behemoth that moves very slowly. A lot of people get frustrated because it moves very slowly, but that kind of dampens out a lot of those effects of leadership change. Of course, he will put his stamp on the attitude and the direction and the motivation, but the lion's share of the work is done, especially in aviation, is done at the Associate Administrator for Safety's level, Ali Barami. That's the one that really has a bigger effect on our membership than the administrator of the FAA.
There's a lot of new avionics, and a lot of that stuff is coming out, and it's in the experimental market where there are less rules, we'll say, and you can put some newer and cooler technologies coming in. Now, a lot of those technologies have been around now for 10, 20 years, and they've really proved themselves. How can we try and get some of those technologies moved into the certified aircraft quicker?
Okay. Well, we actually take the lead on that with AEA. We have our avionics technology incubator in August every year, where we bring in these companies and kind of demystify the FAA rules to them, and so that we can move forward. There's a lot of activity that's been going on in the last decade. EAA kind of led the charge with the Dynon STC they did, 4 years ago, I think. Where the rules, and a lot of people get this wrong, the rules did not change. But when we were dealing with analog systems, we tended to certify everything the same because it didn't matter. So when I was certifying a radio or certifying a display, it was an analog system. It didn't matter. There wasn't a lot of burden, whether it was a 787 installation or a Piper Cub. But as we moved into the digital age, it became more and more challenging. And to certify something at level A for a commercial, heavy commercial aircraft versus a recreational aircraft created a huge burden. And that's where you really started to see that differentiation in the products. What you saw with EAA's certification with and partnership with Dynon was a certification at the intended use level. And so we were certifying things. And you saw that with EAA's STC, the Garmin products have been introduced, the TrueTrack products. All of those products have been certified for their intended market, which is a huge difference. And that's what you're seeing changed. That's what our technology does to demystify and explain those things to you.
And you said you meet every fall to with all the suppliers on that?
Every August.
August. And
you can find that on our website.
So do you see it moving in a direction where we're going to see more and more of these STCs coming out?
Absolutely. And keep in mind that the STC is for the installation, okay? The certification, so if you look at the legacy avionics or you look at avionics intended for the twin market or for jet market, those products tend to be TSO'd, whereas the new generation of products are PMA. So TSO being technical standard orders, standards that are owned by the FAA for the entire spectrum. Parts Manufacturing Authority, PMA, allows you to target your market and you certify to that appropriate level. Still totally certified, but a different market.
And less restrictive to get your product certified.
Well, assuming that your intended market is to, say, a two-place recreational aircraft, the standards that you choose would be appropriate to that versus certifying something for a 200-passenger heavy commercial aircraft.
And then in terms of, coming right up, we've got the final rule on ADS-B goes into effect January 1st, 2020. What's your sense in the GA community out there? And I know you're just one person, but as you're talking to people, does it seem like there's a lot of people who are going to forego that and just avoid those airspaces, or does it seem like most people are trying to find equipage that works for their aircraft?
Well, keeping in mind it's an airspace rule, okay, and that's key. So when you look at the number of transponder-equipped aircraft, because that's really the only measure that's out there, realizing transponder airspace is in parallel with ADS-B airspace. There's a lot of aircraft out there that were delivered with transponders, but they don't really fly in transponder airspace. I think we're in good shape. I think we'll be fine. Do I think that we'll have 10-15% that aren't installed on time? Of course.
All right, Rick Perry of the Aviation Electronics Association, thanks so much for joining us.
You bet.
You're listening to EAA Radio. Stay tuned.